It's time for Cofield and Company. Live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar, inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
Yeah! All right, here we go. Cofield and Company, 5 o'clock hour. Adam Hill is at Treasure Island. I'm getting ready for, and getting you guys ready for, the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Adam Hill, I just saw one of the honorees, inductees, walk in. Gave me a hearty handshake. Actually, I'm gonna out him on this one. Power shook me.
Jesse or Tony?
It was actually Jesse.
Okay.
Jesse Leeds from Lotus Broadcasting, now retired, but longtime salesperson, GSM, general sales manager. I'll tell you, maybe as responsible for the development of more sports talkers in Las Vegas than anyone in the history of the city.
Mm. Yeah, I'm only responsible for one. My tree is one branch.
I think your tree might have multiple branches. So you are taking, this is like, you're very Stephen A. now, where you're like, I made you. Monica McNutt, Andrea Carter, I made you.
Yeah, I made JVT, that's it.
You made John Von Tobel.
I
was told from a source, I can't indicate who the source is, I was told that Von Tobel has now claimed a branch on his tree, which means it's actually on your tree as well.
Oh, okay. Is that Danny?
It is Danny Smythe.
Yeah, I'll take that.
You'll take it?
Sure.
Okay. All right. So, a lot of us in Vegas are actually on the Jesse Leeds tree.
Sure.
Because Jesse, if people don't know, along with being general sales manager, was sort of the guy who was the dude you had to go through to get on to a lot of the Lotus Broadcasting sports stations, which is why at the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame, if you have not heard, we've talked about it often, Tony Bonici and Jesse are going into the Hall of Fame because of what they've developed with the LV Sports Network, now four sports stations strong, partnerships with almost every major sports franchise in town, helping to build things maybe you wouldn't say, hey, that they help build that. But, you know, John Cesenti was on with us, the chair of the committee here, actually, at the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame.
Sure.
And the boss, we're just going to say the boss. Someday Adam Hill wants to be a conciliary for the Las Vegas Bowl,
yeah.
But that's in time. And maybe or would you rather be the conciliary for – no, you want to be on the board, right, for the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I do. But I would love to be on the board of the Las Vegas Bowl, too.
Yes, yes. That would be nice. But anyway, so but a lot of the shows that started on Lotus Broadcasting actually had to go through Jesse Leeds, and he's a very patient guy over the years, and he deserves a lot of credit tonight. So we're looking forward to that. And the other folks who are going in here and the scholarships that are awarded, which is really cool. And then I was here about 4.68 GPAs and 5.03s, and I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah, I think I would 4.75.
I don't know. When it changed to where it could go beyond a 4 is beyond me, but I guess that's a thing. I wouldn't have gone beyond a 4, I can guarantee you that.
Well, if you get straight A's and your classes are significantly harder than other people that got 4s,
right,
with not hard classes, they had to figure out a way to do that. So
yeah,
you got weighted if it was like AP classes.
I believe it or not, I actually had AP classes, but my strength was not like AP physics.
Sure.
I struggled there.
I've told the story. I got 1B in all of high school, and it was journalism.
Ah, that's the best.
Yeah.
That's gonna be a big part of your speech when you go into the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame.
Well, it was my first column in the RJ.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah, it was a shout out to my teacher. They gave me a B because she was like, "Obviously, you earned an A.
Oh, wow!
But you could have done a lot better."
See,
so okay.
Later on in the show, I will reveal a list of the most likely Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Famers in 15 years.
JVT
you,
on there?
You might be on the list.
Oh, nice. That's wonderful.
You might be.
I think I'm not.
I didn't think about the media aspect of it, but I may have to include a couple of names. But think about that. Everyone in the audience, who are the athletes who either have played here in Vegas or from Vegas who are the most likely to go into the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame? There's some obvious names.
Sure, but also when you're thinking about that, think about, you know, if I am on the board at some point, like, I'm going to have some power over this, so like, yes. Think about who I would put in.
Well, you could also put yourself in. Future, you would be Adam Hill will have learned at the feet of Steve Hill.
If anything.
Come on, that's a good one.
Yeah. If anything, I would be on the board to prevent myself from going in.
Yeah, you would argue every year. You'd give all the reasons.
Yeah, like, absolutely not.
You don't want to do this.
Don't do this. I was wondering, and you'll find out soon enough because you'll be out there. Everything I see has Jesse and Tony going in together. It's like a package deal.
Yeah.
But is it two speeches, or are they giving one speech together?
That's going to be interesting. I think – I don't want to comment.
You know?
No, I don't. I believe – I mean, the way I would do it is I would let Jesse – this is me. I would have Jesse speak first
because
he's not quite as loquacious. And then Tony will probably have a little more to say. Because I don't think you let the more talkative person go, and then the next person comes up and they're like, thanks.
Right.
Although, do we say this? John Cecenti hinted at something last week, and we've seen this play out. There is a banquet beforehand, and I'm looking down on the floor right now because we're at the Leafs Family Forum, and they've got, I don't know, about 50 tables set up. I'm probably undershooting there. Everyone's going to get dinner, but to my right, on your radio dial from left to right, there is entertainment and there is an open bar just asking me to walk over and get something.
Huh.
There will be an open bar here for the better part of about 90 minutes. We have had times in the past where people have imbibed a little too much before they went up and made their speech.
Yeah, for sure. I can think of some right off the top of my head.
Can you?
And it gets uncomfortable.
It was wild. Can say it. Or do you have someone different?
Who are you thinking?
It's actually a driver.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I'll say it. Kurt Busch was highly entertaining.
Yeah, sure.
And there's been others. But, well, I mean, like, I don't know that I would, and I'd publicly speak for a living. I think I'd be comfortable doing it sober, but Cofield is more fun. A couple of drinks in, I think.
Sure. I will say usually the first indication is within like the first 2 minutes there's a couple curses and you're like, oh boy.
That was the sign.
And then you start to it just starts to drag on and then like repeat and you're like, oh, okay, here we go. I think they were having a little too much. Which I don't that's your night. Celebrate. Have a great time. I'm totally cool with it. I wish that they forced everybody to be trash when they did their speech.
I don't think I can throw this guy out as a 15-year-ahead Hall of Famer, but it could happen in that time frame. From UNLV basketball, if they really get a cook in here the next couple of years, and frankly, whether this name gets a cook in here for the short term and somewhere else for the long term, maybe Dedon Thomas is one of those guys, right?
Yeah.
He's a hometown guy who stayed home and played at UNLV. This season is going to be really interesting, Adam. I didn't check your paper today to see if you guys have a story on this, but there was a tweet yesterday from Jeff Goodman about Keelan Boone, a former Rebel, believing that, I don't know if he believes it, but Jeff Goodman relayed the message that the NCAA has changed its rules. There's something concerning players who had an incomplete season last year or somewhere along the line that Keelan Boone could get another year of eligibility and is going to, I really want to look at the wording because I think he screwed this up on several fronts, but he's going to be in the transfer portal, and people started melting down around Vegas yesterday.
Yeah. I'm not surprised.
But I don't think they have the whole story. He's not eligible yet.
Right.
And his eligibility, well, the way Goodman wrote it is like, hey, this new rule makes him eligible. Like, he's not eligible yet.
Makes him eligible to apply.
There's hurdles to cross, several, and there's also a weird timetable here, right? So we had talked about the situation yesterday, and I explained to the audience he's not eligible. Right now there is technically not a transfer portal to enter. It's closed. And the NCAA might give an answer. It might go to courts. A judge could take a while to give an answer. We could know in 4 days. We could know in 2 months. We could know in December. So that kind of complicates the issue for everyone involved, doesn't it?
Definitely it does.
Right? So to commit to a player and have a spot open for him or make a spot open for him when you don't know his status, that makes things difficult. I want to play. They had a good conversation this morning on the press box. This is mostly Tyler. I will point out, I feel like Tyler kind of contradicts himself a little bit within the conversation. We pieced somewhere in the middle of the conversation and near the end. So fire this.
Adding Boone to the current mix would require some imaginative roster management. One possibility could be convincing Boone to join as a walk-on with an NIL deal in place to cover the cost of tuition. For a proven player of Boone's caliber, Kruger is willing to get creative. Kruger gave the quote, "We made a commitment to the 13 guys we have. That doesn't mean there aren't still ways that he could come back." I think you should be keeping a scholarship open through the summer for cases like Nemish Keita or this one. You know, he's not going to get, well, most likely is not going to get Keelan Boone
back
because they used up all their scholarships.
Wait a second. The beginning was a comment from Kruger where he said, "We can do something." The ends basically suggest they don't have room for him. They're not going to get him. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, I don't think that's contradicting. It's saying, Kruger saying, hey, there's possibilities we could work something out. And the comments from Ed and Tyler are, well, it'd be a lot easier to work something out if you had
But that's not the way they said it. That's not the way he said it. They can open things up. They can open Kruger believes that he can open things up, and there's creative ways to do it. I'll explain it a little bit more in a couple minutes, but all hope is not lost on this front with Keelan Boone. But he has to be eligible first, and there's a lot more in the story we'll get to. We've got Kenny Bayless here. Just grab that microphone. There's an on-off switch on there. Sorry, we're going solo here, and you got headsets here so that you can – that's all right. You can see or you can hear Adam Hill. Make sure you can hear him there. Adam, we're going on the fly, buddy. We're going on the fly. So – Kenny Bayless is here. He's going into the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame. So I'm Steve. Adam Hill, my partner, is actually down at Treasure Island. So we're doing a split show today. So first of all, how are you? And congrats on the honor.
I'm doing just fine. Thanks. Okay. Thanks for asking.
Adam, look at this, right? How many times do we talk about officials and referees? And it's not usually good. It's not usually good. You're being honored.
Usually it's not. So, yeah, this is special.
So explain your background, because your story is not just as a famous boxing referee. You have like a legit athletic background. Yes. Take us back.
Okay, I was born and raised in Berkeley, California. I didn't start running track. I have a twin brother that started in high school, and it wasn't until college that I started. We both ran the 400 meters. He became a three-time All-American. I became a one-time All-American. And at the time that I was a senior in college, a recruiter from Las Vegas in the Clark County School District, they were recruiting minority teachers. So I just happened to be in the right place at the right time and went to a meeting and heard the whole spiel about Las Vegas and teaching and decided that this is where I wanted to.
What year is that?
That was back in 1972.
Ooh. I'm not going, ooh, because I'm not suggesting you're old, but, boy, Vegas was a different place in 1972.
Vegas was a different place. I don't believe they had 300,000 or 400,000 people when I moved here.
And then where did you wind up teaching?
I started my first year. I was a hall monitor because I had to get my student teaching and a few other accredited hours done. But the first school I went to and was at for 29 years was Orr Middle School.
Oh, wow.
Behind the Boulevard Mall.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you looked east and west from the, well, especially west from the Boulevard Mall,
there was nothing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I've been here since the mid-90s, so it's been a lot more, you know, built up since then. But when I talk to people who were here in the 70s, yeah. I mean, this was a postage stamp. It's crazy.
It was a postage stamp, and I can remember going to McCarran Airport. And once you pass McCarran Airport, it was Sunset Park, it was Wayne Newton's Ranch, yeah. And after that, it was desert.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
That's so crazy. I mean, even in the 90s when I got here, You didn't have to go very far south before it became just, you know, some local ranches and stuff, and now everything's built up all over the place. All right, so teacher, track star, you're in the 70s in Las Vegas. How does boxing and officiating come together?
You know, it's amazing, Steve, because when I first moved here, I didn't really too much like it. The first reason why was it kind of reminded me of listening to Sammy Davis Jr. on the, you know, the racism that existed back then. Well, I think I kind of caught the tail end of it because there were a few clubs I couldn't get in.
Really, in the 70s?
In the 70s.
Yikes.
Yeah, and the other thing was sports. The only thing that they had when I came here was the Running Rebels. Jerry Tarkanian had just moved here. And if you went and saw Frank Sinatra on the strip, that was basically it. But they had boxing. And in February of 1973, I went to a Muhammad Ali boxing card. Muhammad fought a guy by the name of Joe Bugner.
Okay.
And I grew up watching Muhammad on Wide World of Sports on my mom's black and white television, and I just immediately became hooked into the sport. So from that point on, I went to every boxing card in Las Vegas, almost every boxing card, and at some point in time, I wanted to get involved because I loved it so much. So my first thought was to try judging. So I got into the amateur program, I started judging, and things were looking well. I would also still go to the professional shows and judge at the professional shows. But it was this one judge named Jerry Roth that said to me when I wanted to compare my score with his, he says, "You're in fairly good shape, why don't you try refereeing?" And my first thought was, no, I don't want to get in the ring with those guys. And then I thought about it, and I said to myself, well, why not give it a try? I have nothing to lose. So Richard Steele had just recently moved to Las Vegas. I asked Richard. He took me down to Hal Miller's gym, and off to the races I went.
Kenny Bayless is with us going into the Hall of Fame, Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame. We'll bring in Adam here for a few questions in just a second. Adam's over at Treasure Island, our usual Friday home. When you first get in, and I'm not even talking about at the highest level, when you first get in there as an official, is it kind of shocking? Like, what did you have to adjust to? What were you surprised by?
Well, the biggest difference between amateurs and professionals is that with the amateurs is just a three-voice command to them, and that's it. Break, stop, and box. Whereas in the professionals, you can talk to them. Watch your heads. Keep your heads up. Watch the low blows. So it gives you a little bit more of an advantage on the basis of if a foul or something happens, that you can target it that particular spot by either using hand motions or verbally you can communicate with them. Same thing going into the dressing rooms. With the amateurs, you don't go into the dressing room and give them last fight instructions. But in the pros, you go in the dressing room, you have your speech as the what your do's and don'ts are, and then from there the fight commences.
First, like, mega fight that you reffed?
The first mega fight for me was when Bernard Hopkins fought Oscar De La Hoya. And believe it or not, 3 months after that, it was Marco Antonio Barrera against Eric Morales.
Oh, my God.
And, yeah, that fight was a war.
Yes.
And I had scored A's on both for those fights.
Oh, wow.
And then after that, the skies were the limits.
Most controversial fight that maybe you got some guff for about, and it might not have even been, like, public criticism. It might have been one of the camps who were like, hey, Kenny, you screwed us over. Because you see that claim all the time from fight, you know, especially the losing side.
Yeah, they always got to blame somebody, and if there's no one to blame, then why not blame the referee? I got a little scuff when I did the Caleb Plant fought David Benavidez, and David Benavidez had a record of knockouts in a row.
Oh, okay.
And in the fight that I did, he claimed that he would have gotten a knockout if I wouldn't allow so much holding.
Well, that's often a complaint.
Yeah. So other than that, I did a Pacquiao Sugar Shane Mosley fight. Manny Pacquiao is a first-class boxer because I ruled a knockdown that was more of a push. But I ruled it a knockdown. It did not change the outcome of the fight, but it was the first and only time I apologized for my mistake.
Oh, wow.
And he took it graciously. He said, Kenny, no big deal. Those things happen. Really made me feel good.
Kenny Bayless going into the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame, legendary boxing official. Adam, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I know, Kenny, you did so many huge fights, but you were part of the biggest fight in terms of box office and pay-per-view in history with Floyd and Manny. I'm just wondering if you, when you're doing a fight like that, are the nerves kicking in? Do you get nervous when you step in there with those guys?
No, I don't actually get nervous. I would probably say I get more excited, and I don't mind the excitement because that will put me in a position of going in and not getting complacent. And I had refereed Manny a few times. I had refereed Floyd a few times. They're both clean fighters. So there wasn't anything that I had to keep a particular eye on as far as either fighter because they both fight clean. But I was in the amateur program for quite a few years. And by the time I got appointed as a referee, it was kind of old school to me because I've been around the block. And plus, I was an inspector with the Nevada Commission. So I was able to be ringside during the fight and learn from Mills Lanes, Richard Steele, Joe Cortez, Davey Pearl, and all that. And basically what referees do is take a little something from each guy and then develop my style. And I figured being in Las Vegas, being around guys like that, put me in a position to become the referee that I am.
You mentioned a couple guys that you really liked and that were very gracious. You don't have to give us names, but I'm sure there's fighters that weren't so nice and maybe were jerks and maybe you didn't like them. How difficult is it to officiate those guys knowing, like, oh, this guy's a real jerk? I would love if he didn't win.
Well, at all times, we have to have a clear-cut, unbiased mind. People come up to me often and say, well, who's your favorite fighter? I don't have a favorite fighter. Because if I allow my personal feelings to reach in a direction of a fighter, I could end up doing that fighter's fight. And I could possibly have a personal bias to him. And so if you ask any referee, who's your favorite fighter? 99.9% of the time, they'll probably give you, I don't have a favorite fighter. And, well, I can tell you now who my favorite fighter was, and that was Muhammad Ali. But Muhammad Ali wasn't fighting back in the day when I got appointed as a referee.
Adam, anything else?
Yeah, I guess one thing is, you know, obviously there's, you know, you're in charge of safety in there and you got to make sure guys are safe. And I'm just wondering if there's been a time where maybe you let a fight go longer than maybe you should have. And do those things stick in your head? Like, maybe are you more likely to stop a fight soon knowing, like, hey, I know I messed up last time and I don't want to make that same mistake again? How do you put those things out of your mind going forward, especially when you're a young referee?
Well, that's a good question, and a lot of it comes down, Adam, to our seminars. And over the years, we attend seminars, and when it comes to stopping fights, that's probably one of the hardest things for us to do. And, yes, we are taught to stop it too soon than too later because, you know, we're dealing with this fighter's life. And despite the boos and the negativity we could get from the fans – because they wanted it to go longer, that has nothing to do with how we're trained, what we know we need to do in the situation of stopping a fight.
Let's finish up by going full circle back to where we started. I was thinking as you were answering about objectivity and patience in the ring, that being a teacher is probably a good background, right? because you learn it with the kids. Like Adam's question about, hey, being unbiased and having a favorite fighter, I'm sure over the years you teach and you're like, this kid is kind of a pain in the ass. But guess what? Your job is still to give him your best to teach him.
You're exactly right, Steve. And for us referees, when we step in the ring, either we've been able to follow that fighter's career and know what he does, or a lot of times we step in the ring and we don't know anything about either fighter. So, yes, we have to, within that three-minute period, depending upon how many rounds it is, we have to be mindful and study them so that we know where they're going to go if they get hit with a low blow, or are they looking to retaliate. I mean, there's a lot of things that goes in through a fighter's mind as far as if he feels he's getting treated fairly or not, or if we're making the right call or not. And we have to make every type of adjustment to make sure that the fight is clean, the fighters understand us as well as their corner, so that the fans can get a true quality fight.
Well, great spot. We appreciate you coming up, and this is a special night. And congrats on this. This is really cool, and especially for the world of referees, right? You guys need more love.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
There he is, Kenny Bayless. Adam, I feel like your attitude with officials, because you get annoyed by a lot of officiating and how much they can control the end of games, that with combat sports, you're a little more patient and understanding.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it is a very tough job, and it's so important. Now, just like in other sports, they can determine outcomes, right? I mean, as Ken even pointed out there, like you know, you're taught to stop a fight sooner than later, and you know, sometimes if you're in a spot where, all right, look, I'm going to stop this one right now, and maybe a guy's way ahead on the scorecards, and he's getting beat up in this round, and you stop it, and you're determining outcomes. Like, those things can happen, but it is a life. It could potentially be. A life and death situation every time you're in there. And so, like, there is so much responsibility in your hands. Like, I think you can forgive some of that.
Make sure you go up to ESPN Las Vegas on Twitter or at Steve Cofield on Twitter. The link is up for the silent auction, the money raised each year in the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame induction ceremony, and all year long goes to educational purposes, youth sports, and then awarding a half dozen plus scholarships for high academic achievers in the market. So go up there. Silent auction, I think, closes down at 8:45. It's open right now. I've already got a couple of bids in. I don't know if I've been outbid. I will check during the break as we'll continue here from Lee's Family Forum and, of course, Treasure Island on a Friday.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island.
Minutes left in the program. Adam Hill, T.I. Make sure you get on down to Treasure Island to check out all the sports this weekend. 55-plus TVs. Great food specials like the Reuben and a beer, or the fish and chips and a beer. Get the mini pork bites. They're not mini. They're gigantic. There's a lot of them. It's a good value. And free parking, of course, all the time. And it's on the Strip. What a shocker, right? Treasure Island. All right, Adam. I want to get to my list that I was thinking about today. And I know I'm missing. This is one of those where I'm missing a ton of people. If we're going to go 15 years ahead, right?
Okay.
Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame. If you look at the way the Hall of Fame has developed over the years, we've had some really good athletes from the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, honored even into the 90s, and we're talking about college level onto the pros. But we've become such a big city from a population standpoint. Now the bar has been raised. When we have some of the best athletes in given sports, some of them are going to go down as some of the all-time greats in their sport. So I wonder, like, when you're on this Southern Nevada Hall of Fame committee, which you will be.
Sure.
What are you going to do to the people where you're like, hey, that person was a legendary high school player, went on to have a great, let's say a baseball player, had a great college career here, and then made it 7 years in the major leagues, right? Now all of a sudden you got, like, that standard, like, Chris Bryant? Like, look forward. What does Chris Bryant have to do to make the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame? Or is he already in?
He's in.
Is Joey Gallo in? You better answer right.
Well.
But you see what I'm saying? Right? I would say at the top of the list, and I know I'm missing a couple of people who are really obvious. 15 years from now, and this my point is, hey, they're retired from a sport or from, you know, active, you know, work. Who am I missing in this? God, I know I'm missing someone. This is going to be embarrassing. I have one Bryce Harper, two Max Crosby, three Bill Foley, four Mark Davis, and five Kyle Busch. That's sometime in the next 15 years, but especially on the athlete side, like Bryce might not be done for 12 years, right? Might not be done for 10.
Right.
Crosby could play, you know, I guess it was the miracle he could play, and it was like mid to late 30s. And who am I missing?
Mark Davis.
Who am I missing?
Mark Davis one.
Well, I would have Foley ahead of Davis. I would put Foley in first ahead of Davis.
Oh, yeah, true. Yeah, that's true. Foley then Davis.
And you'd put him ahead of the athletes? Well, I think they would, because, and, you know, not to be morbid, but, I mean, there's a lifespan here.
Sure.
Those guys are probably going to play at least 8, 10, 12 more years. You know, Foley's a little older than Mark Davis. But they're definitely both going in, right?
Yeah, I think so. Well, especially, look, if you're saying I'm on the committee, then, yeah, we're getting a lot of people in.
Did I leave out a Golden Knight?
Yeah, I would imagine that a guy – well, it's going to be tough, right?
Because who's your first player choice?
That was what I was just going to say. I would have said a year ago it's Riley Smith because not only of what, you know, he had done on the ice but also as part of the community and a lot of the, you know, a lot of the stuff that he had organized and been a part of and was just so active. But then the fact that he was gone could change that, and I think Marcia So has kind of taken the lead there. But then you go back and say, well, he might be gone now. And then what do you do?
Is it Wild Bill? Is he big enough?
The speech alone, I would like to hear his speech at the induction ceremony based on the speech after the cup final.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So I would go with him just for the speech.
I mean, I don't think you're objective on this one, but I've always talked about, you know, building a statue to the first, you know, super great, impactful Golden Knight, and of course that is Marc-Andre Fleury. Silence.
There's a lot of other people that
silence.
Probably would.
Yes, silence.
Yeah.
Is there someone super charitable and great in the community that I'm forgetting about with VGK? Because that's certainly part of something you consider.
I mean, I think a lot of them. Look, the entrance of professional sports. The entrance of major league sports into the market. I think. Completely changes the complexion of the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame.
Yep.
It's going to be wildly different, and there's so many more possibilities of people to put in for sure going forward. So I think that'll be big. I mean, there's people on every team. There's obviously members of the Aces who brought championships here, and that'll be a part of it as well. I mean, Asia Wilson at some point absolutely is going in. I assume Kelsey Palm's probably going to go in. Like, there's a lot of possibilities in that regard down the road. But I think one of the things we've seen out of the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame is they keep, you know, there's so many people that can still go in for their contributions, but the pool is going to just keep getting exponentially bigger, and I think we're going to have bigger and bigger classes going forward too.
A good example of how the bar has changed because we're producing so many high-level major league, you know, professional sports athletes at the highest level. Major League Baseball Hall of Famer in the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame, Adam, has 122 home runs for his career. He's finished. He's in. Another player is still playing, has 203.
Is that Ludwig?
Another player is still playing, and he has 203.
Okay. Are you making the case for Joey Gallo?
I won't say. Yes, that's Joey Gallo, and the first name is someone who we love on the show. Was also a rookie of the year. Was Marty Cordova.
Marty Cordova?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not all about slugging.
No. There's a lot of people, for sure.
Right. I'll put this out over the weekend. I left open a lot of the top 10, like most obvious, and you're right, I didn't put in any of the aces yet. Oh, there's Dick Calvert, Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Famer. On the mic there.
I put some football players
aside from Max Crosby towards the bottom of the top 10. I do believe that someday that Ronnie Stanley will go in, left tackle for the Ravens, Bishop Gorman guy, and I do believe that Lawrence Guy, who I don't think has really been publicized enough as a Vegas guy, and he's been with the Patriots in good and bad times. I think he will go in, and he does a lot in terms of charity.
Yeah, for sure. Can I make a request? We put Joey Gallo and Mark Davison at the same time.
I don't get the connect. Oh, yeah.
I think it would be cool.
I mean, is it that much of a big deal anymore?
No, I just think it would be a cool, yes. be a cool thing to do.
Sure.
Look, once I'm on the committee, things are changing. We're creating drama.
You're really feeling this.
Sure. I'm in.
I was just looking someone up to make sure they're not in yet. I may have missed someone else really obvious. No, he's in. Okay, Floyd Mayweather's in. There's got to be – what combat people would go in? Is there someone from UFC, a fighter?
Well, some that are already in, I feel like. Frank Mir's in, right?
Forrest Griffin is in. Frank Mir went in 2016. Because that one's a little tricky because you don't necessarily have to be from Vegas, but if you were based in Vegas, and most fighters were based in Vegas. I guess my point is when you are deciding, when Adam eventually replaces John Cecenti, who actually is done this year as the chair, when Adam Hill is deciding, you're going to have the groups that you're going to pick from are going to be incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Because sports has just blown up here.
Yeah, no doubt. It's exponentially bigger. And I think it's cool that we've had kind of that small town feel of the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame because it's always been such a small town and we haven't been a major league market. But now that we are, there's all these endless possibilities. And I think the people that are in now are such a elite group. And then the ones that are going in, you know, this year and going forward, it kind of meant that much more to the small town. But now we're a big city. I think the sports capital of the world at this point, so we've got a lot more possibilities going forward. And it's gonna be maybe not as much of these people that are in this, like people everybody knows. If you've been in town, you've met them and you've run into them and you know them. It might not be the case going forward, so it'll change, but it'll still be amazing.
Yeah, other baseball players might not be 15 from now, but at some point, Bryson Stott, because he is a local. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then,
absolutely.
I tell you who's really starting to emerge now. I don't know what he is, 27. And I hope he has like a 10-year run where he's a legit top three rotation pitcher. Eric Fetty is having a really solid year on a really lousy team. He's definitely turned the corner.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no question. He's been very good, actually. And a local.
Yeah, yeah. Football players of the future. We'll see. We'll see what happens with Brevin Jordan if he emerges as a guy who can be like a 40-catch-a-year tight end. I don't know what's going to happen in the future with Ramondre Stevenson, but I think he's got the potential to put up big numbers in the NFL.
Roma Dunze?
Yeah, that one. Again, 15 years, you would hope that he gets like at least 10 years in the NFL at wide receiver, but he could be an absolute monster. He's got other offensive linemen who have been drafted recently with Vegas ties, so... It's going to be crazy, but tonight's really special. Excuse me as I get choked up. Really special. C.J. Watson's going in, played in the NBA. Bishop Gorman guy. We just talked to Kenny Bayless, world-renowned official, is going in. Our guys from Lotus Broadcasting, Tony Benici, and Jesse Leeds, who's really special to this show as it's been put together, and he was kind of the gatekeeper as we came into Lotus Broadcasting. We'll wrap on a couple of things about the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame, and then I do want to ask Adam a question about contracts in the NFL, and I got all worked up yesterday over Trevor Lawrence. Maybe I'm just a moron on this stuff.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
Now, Thanks to Treasure Island for housing part of the show today. That's our Friday home. Adam Hill's hanging out there. Also, thanks to the folks with the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame. Induction ceremony is going on tonight in Henderson, Lee's Family Forum. We're hanging out here right now. We did the whole show here today. Adam Hill, I'm going to throw a name at you.
Okay.
Bob Arum.
He's not in?
I know. I just did a search for it real quick, looking at the full list. That seems crazy to me.
I say unless, put him in.
Unless there's a backstory to the backstory. And by the way, time is of the essence. You may not think Bob is aged because he hasn't slipped much and he's still a freaking, he's still fiery. Bob in December will be, this, I can't even believe this is correct. Is my math all right? 93, am I right? I went, what?
Wow. It's almost there, look great.
1931.
Wow, yeah.
I'm okay at math.
Not bad.
Wow. All righty. Well, I got a text from Mr. Scoop, Chris Matthews, on that one. So okay. That's what we were looking for.
I'm sure he's on his way there. I'm sure he's going to be at the ceremony.
Yes. In the bag.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Adam, real quick, can you tell the Father's Day note from Antonio Pierce and his son on the staff?
Yeah, probably writing a column for Sunday if people want to check it out. But Antonio Pierce's son, DeAndre, is on the staff. He's an offensive assistant right now, just kind of helping out with a lot of what coaches are doing. He's trying to go into coaching. He's already done some coaching at the college level a little bit, and he wants to pursue this. Now he's younger than some of the players, which is interesting. But about 25, I think he is. Right now, he said a lot of it is just helping there, doing what he needs, like printing out things, putting together presentations, and loading iPads, stuff like that. But he's doing what he has to do to kind of learn the business a little bit and just be around what is a very interesting coaching staff with a lot of young coaches that were former players and a lot of very, very veteran coaching minds like Joe Philbin and Rob Ryan and Marvin Lewis, guys like that are around the team.
In the back.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Trevor Lawrence. $200 million guaranteed, $142 at signing, I think it is, $55 million a year. I had a little meltdown yesterday. I got home. I'm like, why do I do this? The cap's going up. Doesn't matter. Is that a bad deal?
It's not a terrible deal. It's not a great deal either. It's one of those things. I know I saw some fans around the division of them kind of celebrating, like, okay. They're stuck with him and they're paying him a lot, so that's good. But, I think it's going to be, the cap's going to go up enough that it's not going to be crippling, but it's interesting that they did make this commitment and gave him as much as they did, and it sounds like a lot of it is guaranteed.
In the back?
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
You love this guy, Shane Gillis, and now he's fostered even more favor from you because of did he have some comments about your favorite city, Bakersfield?
Yeah, he did hot ones. It's not the greatest episode because he really did seem to be affected by it, and he was just kind of giving some short answers.
Yep. It's a tough show, man.
So, in fact, I saw it was only like 17 minutes, and I was like, man, he must have tapped out.
Whoa.
I was like, that doesn't sound like him. And then I watched it, and he got through him, but he was short answering. But he was asked where the worst crowd he's ever had was, and he said Bakersfield. He's like, they're just animals. He was like, I knew right away. I was like, this is a problem.
If someone bangs on your city, but, deep down you kind of know it's true. Can you really get mad?
No. You just have to accept it.
For you, I think you've been to this place. Shane Gillis on Bakersfield says it sucks.
Yeah.
You saw that Trump destroyed Milwaukee, where the Republican convention is. Can you get mad in Milwaukee when he says your city sucks?
No, it kind of sucks.
There you go. All right, Adam Hill, I appreciate you manning that side of things. Thanks to the Burbs, Patrick Berbert, risk supervisor, was on with us earlier. Kenny Bayless helped us out. He's going into the hall tonight. Matt Neverett, get out to see the Aviators this weekend. And Barry Odom as well, UNLVtickets.com for football tickets. Thanks to Willie, too. Have a great weekend. Happy Father's Day.